Hello and welcome to another episode of Board Gamer. Cole, how's your week been?
It's been a busy week, but I'm glad that we've been able to come together to talk about this.
Yeah,
because this is going to be a really fun episode. I'm looking forward to discussing it. By now, if you're viewing it from home, you already know the theme of the episode, but yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Have you been playing any games this week or?
Yes. I was trying to remember them all. Yeah, this week I got to play Thunder Road Vendetta for the first time.
Oh, nice. How did you find that?
Really fun. I just tried to do what you and Tim had recommended and it didn't work.
Just fly into stuff?
Yeah, basically. Now, one thing I tried to do, we had this moment and I was just thinking, I've really, really wanted this epic, memorable finish.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I managed to get one of my cars right to the one space before the finish line. One space before the finish line. So I was like, but I had no other moves to do. I could not get it across the finish line. So I was like, blow it. I need to make it happen now. So I tried to airstrike my own car. So I was like, airstrike my own car using my helicopter.
Oh my word.
Because sometimes you could roll it, it'll push it forward. So it's like, there's a chance I will airstrike it and it'll push my car over the line.
Yeah. And what happened?
It didn't, it went sidewards. And earlier on in the game, I did something similar. I was like, I want to see if I can shoot my car forward a little bit. So I'm going to, I cut my one car behind my other one and I rolled to shoot. To shoot my own car, ended up sending it into a cliff. But it was great fun.
It's a good game though, isn't it?
It is really fun. It was brand new, the idea of a board that slides off the table like this and you add more pieces.
Yeah, it's
that
very cool.
Very unique.
I think this is when we played it on TTS, there was a script that they had where the board game, the part of the board slid off, the next one come in.
Okay.
And, you know, how many extras meant to slide off? Is it two? I think it's two.
The way we
it?
Did it is when someone gets that far, one piece comes off.
Yeah, yeah. But how many times before the next piece comes on? How many times does that happen? Because okay. There's an end piece, isn't there?
Well, yeah, but I wasn't running it. The way I was taught it is the chap I was playing with that was running it said, the end game trigger is when one person is out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's different because we only played two player.
Maybe, yeah. We were playing it four player, so I don't know. But you know what I especially love about that game? The theme and the production.
Arena. Well, that is a very good segue into what our topic is this week. So we're going to be discussing the difference between production compared to mechanics and theme and just overall production as well, really. So just going into that. I think it's going to be a really interesting episode because a lot of people have got a lot to say on this. And I think there's been a whole category of games just based on beige production. Mm. So it's quite a niche in the board gaming hobby as well. So I tell you what, we'll dive straight into it. What is your opinion on board game production compared to mechanics? Hmm. Where do you sit on the scale? What's the most important for you? Maybe that was a bit of a broad question.
But no, I understand the question. I don't think there is a clear answer. I'm going to start it with saying that. I don't think you can say this is the answer. Because just in the same way, you can't compare 100 board games with each other accurately because they're all totally different. You can compare 100 themed games with each other or maybe something. So I think it very much depends on what's the game's goal.
Yeah.
You're making me think a little bit. For example, let's think of a themed game off the top of my head. Think, say, something like Nemesis.
Yeah.
Is all about theme. I was just talking about Thunder Road Vendetta, which is heavily around the theme of Mad Max and this kind of racing craziness going on.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you look at these very thematic games, the purpose of playing the game is to immerse yourself in that theme. So sometimes to make sure it fits the theme, some corners are cut.
Yeah.
I think with Nemesis, there's a few times, and I've played it a bunch of times, I'm thinking, I could see them needing to polish that. I haven't played some of the latest ones, like I think it's Retaliation and Lockdown. I haven't played them. I don't know if they polished certain mechanics. But if they did, that might be why, because the original, sometimes you play it a little bit and you're thinking, I get the theme. I'm understanding this because the theme makes sense.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like little things, like sometimes how you'd move somewhere and the noise that you created came from a hallway that you haven't yet been into. But, you know, the mechanic doesn't quite fit exactly what you're doing there. But it's fair enough, you know, because the whole thing's meant to be that you're causing noise wherever you go. But how can you cause noise somewhere you haven't been yet? But yeah. I get how you just go along with it because it's part of the theme. Whereas, you know, yeah.
No, I do get sense. That. Do you think that this tends to be a selling point in towards the more crowdfunded market now?
I think you've got different people. You have got some of your, you know, your old school gamers, and they, you know, they know, like, sometimes, like, I'll give an example. I've been looking on crowdfunding, and sometimes I'm looking there going, I can't believe that game is like successful campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It looks quite beige to me. Like, I would have scrolled right past it, but maybe it's because people know it's been polished really well and they are drawn into it. And maybe they're looking at it thinking, yeah, that's going to be really good because they haven't spent too much time on the theme. That could be the case. You know, me personally, I'm a bit of a sucker for nice artwork and stuff like that. But I have been burnt a few times where a game looks really good, but doesn't play that well. And I do think, you think like Orleans, Puerto Rico, some of these other older games, like Caverna, the artwork is a little bit dated. I'm not going to say it's bad, but it's a bit dated compared to modern standards.
Yeah.
But they play really, really, really well. And you don't care what the artwork looks like because they're just so darn good.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I think the mechanics does outweigh the theme.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll give my point of view in terms of the theme and when I think the theme matters the most. And I think it's dependent on the genre of the game. And for a Euro game, for me, the theme, it ties into it. However, if the artwork is poor, I say poor, not flashy. That's what I'm talking about here. I think the artwork can be poor in the sense of iconography being not the best. And that can have a negative experience on a Euro game. Me and Tim played Arboria recently, and I don't know if have you seen the look for that game. It's like a Euro game that's on LSD, really. It's honestly, it's insane. The amount of colours on the... But the one thing that I really struggled with was the iconography was really small, where I think in terms of production value, that is where... In a Euro game, that's what matters to me. Mm. Where in terms of a dungeon crawler, if I'm playing Frosthaven or Gloomhaven or whatever, I want the miniatures to be the best they possibly can be. And it's all about immersing yourself into that experience. And that is when I think the production value matters the most.
Yeah, that does make sense. This is where I kind of... It's so tricky, isn't it? Because I've complained before that I don't like it when miniatures are sold separately. But if a game is made and it does well and then they bring out miniatures and expansion, I get it because they've put all their time into make sure the game works well rather than trying to sell people that, hey, look at this game, you get loads of stuff, you know. But then I like to own the stuff. But I do totally get you there.
Yeah. You know what? I was thinking between mechanics and theme, there's always going to be some that lean a certain way. What game would do you feel that balances it perfectly?
That is a really tough question. I could use my go-to that I've been using for like the whole year.
Okay, yeah. Go with your go-to.
No. You don't want to hear me talk about Nidavellir again.
Oh, no.
I love that game.
Nidavellir is great. We've talked about Nidavellir in another episode, so we won't go into how the game works. But in terms of a production value and mechanics, I think it does strike that balance really well.
That's exactly what this. I don't know why people don't talk about this game any more than we do. Like, it's the best game. It just works. It nails it for everything. It's a perfect 7.
Perfect 7.
It's a perfect 7 in all departments.
Yeah, yeah, I do. I see where you're coming from. I think a game that does it for me in terms of both is probably Scythe.
Oh, yeah. Scythe is really good.
Yeah, because the icons are perfect in terms of, like, you release a mech from the board or you've done X amount, however many times. The board always leads you to what the next answer is.
I love that. I love a world. Yeah, you know what? Now you're saying that, you're bringing me to think about so many things. I think a board that is easy to read is such an underrated thing in design.
Yeah, definitely. And also I think Stonemaier games have actually kind of, they're the leaders in this in terms of the board making everything super smooth in terms of gameplay, what we have to do next, what's suboptimal, why you should do this on a certain go. I think, yeah, they've really nailed it. I think that's their big selling points for Stonemaier games.
Do you know what my favorite design on this point is? Not necessarily my favorite like artwork, but my favorite design in the sense of a board that is so clear to read. I think they've hit the golden ratio. They've hit the sweet spot for design and production readability and usability is Dune Imperium, because it looks really nice, the tones are really nice, but it's not too cluttered on the board. You can see exactly where, how much it's telling you a space gives you.
Yeah.
You can see very clearly how many squares to put in, but it still looks nice.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look cluttered. I think they nailed it, because some boards, take like Wormspan. I mean, I really like Wormspan, but I will say they went just a little bit too much in the design. Like, they've got this little thing where it looks like there's pencil writing across the board and stuff like that. I don't like that. I like the art style of it, but I don't like playing like with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it was like a piece of art that I'm going to frame, sick, it looks so cool. But then trying to play and there's like loads of just stuff on the board can be a little bit distracting.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. It depends when art blends into usability and the whole experience that you're trying to portray. Cool. I thought that was I'd get your viewpoint. Now I'm going to ask you some questions. I'll answer them as well. So I know we've gone over like what the perfect balance is for us. So I know there's going to be other people, however, that listen and watch the podcast, and they'll be saying, okay, but I love thematic games. They're the games for me. If you lean towards that style of game, what game would you recommend?
Sleeping Gods. No hesitation.
Nice.
It depends if you like that theme. But the theme of exploring a world and discovering things, discovering monsters, going on quests, like having that full RPG thematic element, a game that will engross you in it, Sleeping Gods. I mean, there are other games out there. There are smaller games that will engross you in a character.
Yeah.
But it's trying to strike that balance, isn't it? Because you take like an RPG game, like a D&D and something, they immerse you into the theme of playing that character. Mm-hmm. But if you make someone play something like Bang or Codenames or Secret Hitler or something, there will always be a case where people, you might say, oh, well, this is your character. But then there will always be a case where, like, yeah, but it just means I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, you give someone Pandemic and say, right, you're the medic. Well, how much they feel, right, I'm going to come in and cure this. Or they go, oh, I'm just going to move there and remove some cubes.
Yeah.
That depends very much on the person, like how much they invest in.
Yeah.
Because the more anyone invests in anything will make them feel like they're more part of it as well.
No, I think that's a really good point. And in terms of Sleeping Gods, what's the main theme of the game?
It's an RPG. You just go on quests, discovering stuff. You travel around this huge map. The one book is a big map, just like an A to Z, but it's artistically done.
Mm-hmm.
And as you travel around this A to Z, on each page, there's loads of different places you can go on each page. And they've all got a number. So if you go to that number, you then go to another massive book and you read that section, that story. So if you get to like number 76, you go to the story 76 and any quests that come up. And there could be multiple quests. So you pick up quests along the way and it will say, if you have this quest, read this paragraph. If you have this quest, read this paragraph. And then you get options. So you're very immersed in it.
Yeah.
When we did it, we did this thing that, depending on whose turn it was, the other person read out the story to you. So you felt like they're reading what's happening and you have to then respond with, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to do A, this, B, this, or C, this? And because that person's read it to you, you feel like you're being told this story and you have to react. So it helped make it a bit more thematic.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. I think I definitely want to give that a go. Do you think it's the kind of game that you can replay again, or is it just a one-off experience?
That is a really good question. I haven't finished it, and the reason I'm going to say I haven't finished it is the thing is like 300 hours long.
So, oh, okay, fair enough.
So, or whatever. Maybe it's not that
I was going to ask whether I should look for like a used copy on Facebook or something.
You can. Mine's a used copy, as long as they reset it. Because it's not like a legacy where they'll tear up cards or draw on cards, but everything comes in a certain order because you can save your game by putting things away in a certain order in the box so you can get them straight out. So I bought a copy that was reset and it's like new. The person that sold it to me was awesome. So
oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, but it's a great game and you'll definitely be able to get your wife involved because she'll love it as well.
Nice. I like it. The game that I was thinking in terms of thematic, I mean, the obvious one for me is probably Gloomhaven.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go slightly different. I haven't played enough Gloomhaven to give an honest opinion. I've only played one online go. That's pretty much it. I got in a bundle that was sold digitally. So the game that I'm going to recommend, based on thematics that I've played a few times now, is HeroQuest.
Okay.
And the way that I would phrase it is it's D&D light. And I think that is perfect. The perfect crossover for someone who's heavy into D&D games and they want to dive a little bit more into the board game inside of it. And I think that is a great entry point because you've still got the thematic style of this is D&D, we're running away from orcs, we're running away from goblins, we're trying to find treasure, and there's all these different elements that are going on. And we had a great game where one of my friends, she just kept on opening every single doors to every single dungeon, and then as soon as she opened them, she just ran away and let the monsters just chase after us, which was a lot of fun. But it was great because I'm sure she's just played quite a lot of D&D. And yeah, I think it's a really good entry point. I don't think it's the best game ever, but in terms of that gateway from D&D into the more thematic board game experience, I think that is a good one. I know there's quite a few others in that dungeon crawler category, so probably any along them lines, as long as the reviews are good.
Yeah. Here's a thought. I'm just wondering that, you know, as we've been talking and listening, I was thinking about how, depending on who the person is how I would kind of advertise the game in a way. As an example, imagine I've got two different people and I'm going to recommend them to play Splendor. Now, the one person I might say, oh, you'll love this game. Say it's, you know, you, or it's someone that's already played board games. I'd say, oh, it's a really cool set collection game. You'll really like this. It works really well. You got a nice upgrade system. You'll like it. And you'll think, cool, that sounds sweet. I'm happy to play that game. The other person is someone that's never played board games. And I go, well, in this game, you are a gem hoarder and you've got to collect gems. And as you're trying to do it, you're trying to win the appeal of different nobles in the area. And that's what makes them go, hey, that sounds interesting. I'll play that.
Nice.
The one person, I have to use the theme. The other person, I have to use the mechanic. And I think the more board games a person plays, the less you need to use theme to draw them in.
Yeah.
Whereas for someone that doesn't play board games so much, you need to use a theme to try and get them interested.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
No, that makes sense.
I wonder, do you find that you have to do a similar thing?
No, I think that's a really good point. I think the thematic teach always works better. Maybe I'm just generalizing too much.
It
dives people into the experience and it lets them know that you're prepared for how this game is going to play this way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty tough on an extremely dry Euro.
Mm. You are a noble in Renaissance France in the 16th century. Nice.
But even that is like... The castle, I watched a YouTube video of someone explaining the castles of Burgundy, and they tried to do it in this thematic way, but they were kind of taking the mick a little bit with it. And I thought Castles of Burgundy is probably one of the hardest ones to throw in that thematic style. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you.
But yeah, I think that's going to lend itself out. Some people are extremely logical and they just want to know the crux of how
that's
something's going to work. You know, maybe they wouldn't.
You are convincing me, and I'm looking back, and I think when you teach a game using the theme, you actually are drawing more on the fun element of the game.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're teaching a game solely mechanics, it becomes a little colder.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking, like, the way I was taught Hands of Teutonica. I mean, that's a pretty dry theme, to be fair. You're like 15th century traders across Germany or something. But I remember someone saying, so each of these cubes, they're your traders and you are the merchant manager and you're trying to make these trade routes with all of your guys. And I was like, cool, I've got all these guys I can put out. And they're just little squares. I've got all these guys I'm putting on the board and I'm making routes across Germany. Ooh. And it's much more fun. Whereas if I've tried to go... So if you connect these squares and then you can move one square to that city there.
Yeah.
It's a lot less fun. That's how it works. But being told I've got all these traders I get to work with does sound a little bit more fun.
It's more appealing. Mm. It's funny because we played Agricola last week and I think a really good way it kind of immerses you into it. And that Agricola is very dry. I mean, 16th century German farmers doesn't exactly scream fun. But the in the game, when you upgrade your rooms, there's like little different scenarios that are going on in the room. Like there's one room where you flip it over. You go from your wooden room to, I think it's clay next. And on the clay room, they're playing Agricola in the room. And I thought, oh, you could, as teaching the game, you could kind of throw these little components in while teaching it.
That is a good point. I think it's trying to find that sweet spot, isn't it? And it's not always easy done. I suppose the only problem is when a game over, when the game itself overcompensates theme maybe to try and not hide, but make up for a lackluster game.
Yes. I think that's been the common criticism of a lot of crowdfunding games, where it's look at these miniatures.
I mean, there was one of our much earlier podcasts, I slated Marvel United because I just don't think there's that much of a game there. And I know that I'm probably the one board gamer in the world that thinks that.
I'm sure that is a common opinion, but a lot of people feel the other way. So.
Yeah. Well, you take, for example, like Beast. I loved Beast. Mm-hmm. I think I talked about that ages ago in one of our other episodes. But I loved Beast when I played it. Played it twice, loved it again. But I know that I am making myself love it because I love the theme. The theme is so cool, but I grew up playing Monster Hunter. You know, I love the theme. But I'm going to be really honest, the mechanics don't really work very well.
Oh, really? Don't you think?
It works, but I do think they would have benefited from 3 to 6 months more playtesting to polish some stuff. And I've played it 3 times. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've not just played it once, I've played it 3 times, and it's a long game. So I've played it as the Beast, as a hunter. I've tried a variety of settings. I've played at different player counts. I mean, maybe I need to play it some more. I just, from an initial playtester's view, imagine I'm from a playtester, that would be my opinion. Rather than as a consumer, I would just think, not less theme, but let's, like, if they'd put as much time into the mechanics, maybe as they put into the artwork. Yeah. Because they've given you loads of monsters. They've given you loads of different cards. Mm-hmm. Maybe, let's say, I don't know, if I was to say, I mean, this sounds really bad, but if he was to say, remove a monster, and all the time they spent into making that extra monster and all that extra artwork, they spent just polishing a few of the mechanics, you'd have had a banging game.
Yeah.
But it's a good game. It's it's not a bad game. Would I play it again? Yeah, sure. But that's where I've totally seen it, where I'm using the theme to kind of cover over mechanics that just needed a little bit more polishing.
Got you.
I don't know if that makes any sense at all.
No, it does. All right, so swinging the other way, we've talked about games based just on theme that you'd recommend to people. Uh-huh. Going to go the other option, and if someone is purely interested in mechanics... Mm. What game would you recommend to them?
Need of a Lear. I had to say, I need to get a t-shirt. I love Need of a Lear. I had to do that just to wind you up, man. I had to do that. Ooh, that is a very good question. A mechanic-centered player. Definitely something really beige, because those games just work amazing.
Probably something.
Yeah. Let's see, what
base
things do you have here?
You know what? It's funny that we had...
Castles of Burgundy is brilliant.
Yeah, we've got a group chat and it's just called Beige Gamers.
Do you know, some games that work really, really well on mechanic, you know, anything like Orléan, Le Havre, Feast for Odin, Hansa, any of these very beige style games, they all do very, very well. They do what they are asked. You know,
I'm gonna
even Seven Wonders and stuff. They really do a good job. Just doing this mechanic thing.
Okay, I'm gonna pin. I want you to pin it down on one game.
Puerto Rico,
nice.
Puerto Rico, yeah. If you love mechanics, Puerto Rico is a game. I was actually talking to just another gamer earlier this week about Puerto Rico. And we were saying, you know, it's a game that if you had a few guys that, you know, really like their games and they like, you know, they like playing these sort of heavier games, you know, you could suggest Puerto Rico and probably no one will want to play it because they want to play the big flashy ones and avoid fall and all of these, you know, Apiary with a beautiful brand new box art. But to be fair, if you got Puerto Rico to the table and they all played it, they will probably say it was the best game of the day because it just works so darn well.
Yeah.
So I'll probably have to go with Puerto Rico for that one.
Nice, great choice. I think if I was going to recommend one, I'm going to go a bit out there on this one. it's a unique player count, so it's only with two players, but I would say Patchwork.
Ooh, okay.
And I just think Patchwork, I mean, all you're doing is making a quilt, but it works.
Base themes, man.
it just works perfectly for the player count that there is. I think it's an amazing game. And actually, in fact, I said I wanted to do one game, but I'd say all the Juve Rosenberg games, really. Oh, yeah. Especially some of the big box ones, Feast Road.
The designers from Germany, you know it's going to work.
Yeah, that is true.
It's true, man. Why do you think they're called Euros?
Yeah, cool. So we've gone over best thematic and best mechanic that we'd recommend to people. So we want that smack down the middle, one that crosses both. So I'm going to ask you to name a game that you'd recommend for people that want a bit of both worlds.
I think if I was to pick the best game all round, would be Pandemic Legacy Season 1. Nice. The reason I would say it is the theme just sucks you in. If you already liked Pandemic theme and you already found it a little bit thematic, that just takes the biscuit, because it just amps it up to 11 and beyond. And I'm not going to give any spoilers at all. It's really, really good. It really engrosses you in so much more than Pandemic. In fact, after playing it, Pandemic feels like the light version or the trial version. I feel like Pandemic Season 1 is that's the real Pandemic. It's awesome. But the best bit about it is everything works. All the mechanics, they're just so clean. Everything works. And the longer you play it, it gets way, way more complicated than normal Pandemic.
Yeah.
For reasons I'm not going to say. But it all works. It's like everything they thought about designing, they checked that everything would click and sync. And mm-hmm. It does. Sure, it's a legacy game. It's one-time playthrough. But if we think about that in reality, the game is a maximum of 24 plays. I won't explain why. The game is a maximum of 24 plays, and mild spoiler. but if you're imagining it's 2 hours a session, then actually you're looking at a maximum of like 48 to 50 hours of playing.
Yeah,
there's quite a lot for like a game that's only about £50.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think the thing that's put me off Pandemic Legacy is, one, I've got to get group consistent enough to play over however many sessions, and also everyone that is fully invested in that theme. Who did you play
it
with?
So I played it with Luke and his cousin and her husband.
Okay.
And it was really good. It was really good. We all felt invested. We were all there, and we all lent into it as well.
Yeah.
You know, we all knew it was going to be thematic, so we lent into the theme, and so we loved it together. And yes, it is effort to try and get the right people. It was effort to try and make sure everyone was free, but it's absolutely worth it. It's the best game that you will probably play if you're looking for a game that nails both theme and mechanics.
Oh, nice. I'd love to give it a go. As I said, I don't think the opportunities have arisen where I've got the right game group to play it with. Just out of interest, did you actually finish the campaign?
I wasn't going to say that. we got... I don't know what it says on the box to tell you how far we got through it.
Okay, you don't have to spoil anything.
We got about 3/4 through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just been that issue of trying to get everyone together, which has been the challenge, because we all live quite far from each other.
Oh, okay.
But we're about 3/4 through it, and it is still, though, just from that experience, loved it. And that was so many sessions. I've lost count of how many sessions it was. So you definitely get your money's worth of it. Okay. That's for a certainty.
Oh, I'd love to give it a go. I think, yeah, I might need to find some people to play it with.
And you get loads of stuff. Like, there is so much in that game. So even production-wise, you're thinking, man, like, I've definitely getting my money's worth for both game and components.
On a scale to five, where do you think it ranks on the weight category?
On BGG's weight category.
No, in your personal opinion, what is it? Light, medium, heavy, medium light?
I would...
I'm just thinking, I'm trying to think of people in my head now who I could get to play this.
What I would say is it starts... As if you've got someone that's played Pandemic, that's like a must. They need to have played a good few games of Pandemic. Okay. But I would say it's a medium that becomes heavy. Because as the game goes on, more things are added to the game, as you'd expect from a legacy game. So it starts to the more medium end of light, and then it definitely transitions in. If someone has never played Pandemic before, that is a learning curve and a half. Make sure someone's played Pandemic a few times. They know how that game works well. Then they're going to really go in. Your almost first game is almost a game of Pandemic.
Okay.
And then it just goes up and up.
Oh, it just ramps up.
It ramps up something awful. So, yeah. But even the first game isn't just a game of Pandemic.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice. I think that's a great suggestion. I definitely want to give that a go. I'm trying to think of a game that I'd put in both categories.
I'd be curious to know.
I think if I was going to choose one, I don't want to rehash games that we've already talked about previously. I'm going to throw a game out there that I haven't played too much of yet, and it's Voidfall.
Okay, right.
Yeah, I think in terms of... the mechanics all work really well together. It's a space opera, but that's extremely thematic. I mean, there's so many different factions that you can play with. It's a really heavy game. But in terms of how it all comes together and all the mechanics, I think it works brilliantly.
Mm, that's a really good point, yeah. I haven't tried that yet, but I'm looking forward to it. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing exactly what you've just described.
Yeah, no, I think you'll like it, hopefully, anyway. It's not one that you throw out to new people. And it probably does lean towards a certain type of player. Like, I think if you like Twilight Imperium or Eclipse or the big ones, you know, I think... You'll really enjoy Voidfall, but I think the mechanics just work really well together as well. And under the skin of it, it's not just dudes on a map, which I think a lot of these games tend to be. And I think kind of Root probably falls in that category as well.
Mm. I was thinking, I'm surprised we haven't mentioned Root today, because Root does a really good job of
theme, the mechanics, the way they all work together, I think they're really good. You know what, the more I'm thinking about it, the more games that are just coming to us.
At that case, it's probably a good place to stop and leave it with the audience then. And
cool, so, ask some questions to you guys. One being, if you was going to recommend a game just for the people who love theme, what game would you recommend? The other end, mechanics, what would you recommend to people? And what game do you think that strikes the balance in between? Leave a comment on the video below. So we look forward to hearing your responses, and we'll catch you on the next one.